This is the Dan Abrams Law and Crime Podcast with SiriusXM Radio. I'm going to make a proclamation right now about Matt Whitaker. I think that he is short for this world as the acting attorney general. I don't think he's going to survive the scrutiny. I think there are too many questions, both constitutional, statutory, ethical, practical, political, that are going to lead this administration to pull his nomination. It's a big projection. And of course, as I've been in many other cases, I could be absolutely wrong. And there are a number of pretty complicated legal questions. I'm going to lay them out for you, and then I'm going to bring in Professor Steve Vladek from the University of Texas, who's written an important op-ed piece in the New York Times. Issue one is something called the appointments clause. And the question there is whether the president can even appoint someone to this kind of role, in essence, a very high position, without the advice and consent of the Senate. That's one issue. Separate question is if he can, under the law that he is using, it's called the Vacancies Act, which is basically in the answer to the first question is saying the Vacancies Act is basically, more important, more dominant than the Appointments Clause when it comes to this particular issue. If they survive that, they still have the Vacancies Act question, which is whether the Justice Department succession should apply here, meaning there is a specific provision, Section 508, which addresses Justice Department succession. It provides that in the case of a vacancy in the office of Attorney General, the Deputy Attorney General may exercise all the duties of that office. The statute further provides that if both the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General are unavailable or unable to serve, the Associate Attorney General shall act as Attorney General. Now, one person who has said that the president, has said that the president wouldn't have the power to do this on the first question without the advice and consent of the Senate is Justice Clarence Thomas, who's written about this very issue, in fact, in 2017. So a lot of people are out there saying that as a constitutional legal matter, these two issues, number one, no advice and consent of the Senate. Number two, the fact that someone else within the Department of Justice, who was a ranking official, should have gotten the position. A lot of people saying both those things make it legally impossible for the president to do this. But Professor Stephen Vladek, a professor of law at the University of Texas, does not agree. He wrote a New York Times piece. Whitaker may be a bad choice, but he is a legal one, and he joins us now. Thank you so much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan. Good to be with you.
So, first of all, have I addressed the two fundamental legal questions correctly?
Yeah, I mean, I would flip the order of them, Dan. I think, you know, we tend to try to answer the statutory question first so that if we, you know, don't have to get to the constitutional question, we don't. But, you know, those two questions are certainly there. There's a third question that's also built into the statutory issue, which is even if the Federal Vacancies Reform Act does apply, did Jeff Sessions actually resign?
Right, right.
So the Vacancies Act only applies when the vacancy is created by death, disability, or resignation.
But that seems to me to be a pretty weak one. I mean, look, as much as it's clear the president fired him, by Sessions saying, I resigned at your request, it's still a resignation. So I don't see how you get around that one.
Oh, I agree. But I'm just trying to sort of lay out what everyone's arguing about. So I think once you agree that Sessions resigned, the next question is, does the Vacancies Act actually apply alongside the DOJ succession statute that you mentioned? And then if it does, is it constitutional insofar as it allows the president to pick someone who hasn't been confirmed by the Senate, as you say, to exercise the duties of attorney general, even on a temporary basis? So I think you covered all that. I think analytically, that's the order I tend to think about.
All right. So, but let's take your piece and yours. You are basically saying on both of those issues, correct? You do not believe that the president is either violating the statute or the Constitution with this appointment, correct?
That's right. I mean, I think it's a stupid statute for reasons that we are all quickly learning about. But, you know, bad law doesn't make for bad constitution.
And tell us why. I mean, in the sort of, because this is pretty heady stuff. I mean, it's pretty complicated from a sort of summary point of view. Why do you think, and again, I think it's important to try to keep this stuff clear in our heads. Why, first on the question of the Vacancies Act, why shouldn't what seems like a clear statute about who gets the next position, why shouldn't that apply rather than the president being able to pick whoever he wants?
Sure. So starting with the statute, I mean, it's certainly usually the case that a more specific statute will take the place of a more general one. I think there are two big counterarguments here, and I think they're both independently preclusive. The first is that the Vacancies Act, the one that purportedly gives the president the power to do this, was actually enacted later, after the DOJ statute. And so there's the argument that when you have a conflict between two statutes, then we usually assume that the last one wins because Congress gets to change its mind. But the second argument, and Dan, this to me has always been the most compelling one, is when Congress passed the Vacancies Act, it actually amended the DOJ statute to cross-reference the Vacancies Act. In other words, if you look at 28 U.S.C. Section 508, if you look at the provision that says the Attorney General is followed by the Deputy Attorney General and so on that you quoted, it actually says later on in the same provision that for purposes of, and then it says Section 3345, which is the Vacancies Act, it defines the first assistant, that is the default deputy to the Attorney General, as the Deputy Attorney General. There's no reason why Congress would have done that. There's no reason why Congress would cross-reference the Vacancies Act if it didn't think that those two coexisted.
All right, so just to clarify, I want to make sure I'm understanding what you're saying here, is there is an argument, right, that a more specific statute should be viewed as more important than a broader statute. But what you're saying is that the broader statute, the Vacancies Act, when it was changed, and it was changed later, that there was a specific reference to this issue of succession, right? As a result, the Vacancies Act incorporated that, and as a result, has to be viewed then as the dominant one because it came second and because they clearly were referencing this specific provision. So Vacancies Act wins.
So I wouldn't say Vacancies Act win, Dan. I would say they're not mutually exclusive, right? That the DOJ statute gives the president one option, which is to go through the DOJ line of succession. So after the Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein, there's no current associate attorney general, so the next in line would be Solicitor General Francisco.
Right, but the language about shall, right? You're saying that the shall has to be read in conjunction. I feel like we're getting super weedy here, but the shall part that a lot of people are talking about, you're saying that gets that's not as relevant in the big context here.
That's right, and to try to make this as accessible as possible, what it really boils down to is, for the appointment to be illegal under the statute, without even getting to the constitutional question, you would have to believe that the DOJ succession statute is exclusive, that it's the only way that the president can fill the post of attorney general on a temporary acting basis. And all I'm trying to say, and it's not just I who is saying this, I mean, the Justice Department itself concluded in 2007 that this was the right reading, is that the Vacancies Act, when it was passed consciously with the DOJ succession rules in mind and understood that it was incorporating those rules, but not either displacing them, Dan, or deferring to them, right? That it's basically, they're both available options for the president.
Let me ask you, do you view the appointment of Whitaker as a scandal?
Yes. I mean, I think, you know, there's a difference between there's an old expression I teach my first year law students, that there are things that can be lawful but awful. And, you know, I think the theory behind the appointments power is that the president's allowed to pick some people who a lot of the people may not like. Mm-hmm. And that if it's a permanent appointment, it's the Senate who exercises the, you know, the vetting function. But if it's a temporary appointment, you know, we allow the president some play in the joint, some flexibility, in the hope that he'll know enough to know that that's not an invitation to go for the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
And it's not an invitation to put in someone who is going to be perceived, rightly or wrongly, as your henchman, who is really just there to do your bidding, as opposed to, you know, advance the interest and agenda of the agency he or she is running.
Professor Vladek, I know you got to run. Appreciate your time. This is the Dan Abrams Law and Crime Podcast with SiriusXM Radio. We've got a very special guest joining us now, the former Attorney General of the United States under President Bush II. Alberto Gonzalez joins us now. Thank you so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it.
That's good to be with you.
So let me first get your general reaction to this appointment of Matt Whitaker as the acting Attorney General.
I guess a little bit of surprise. You know, Matt was a U.S. attorney under President Bush, and so we were involved in selecting him. But, I'm not sure he did himself any favor by comments he's made on CNN about how to stop the Russia probe. And I'm not sure the administration did itself any favors either by putting Matt in that position because of that reason. It's raised a number of questions and about whether or not he can be impartial. From my perspective, I think it's a question of what the career ethics folks at the department believe. And I'm assuming that whatever they say, that Matt will abide by that, just like Jeff Sessions abided by their advice. But nonetheless, Matt's he's a wonderfully talented individual. But it's just hard for me to imagine that he has more experience dealing with the department issues than someone like Rod Rosenstein. So I think one must wonder why Matt was selected for that position, even if temporary, and not simply let Rod or someone senior in main justice assume the position. But, that's the prerogative of the president. That's what he's done. Yep.
Let me ask you about that, because, when you were appointed to the position, you had been a Supreme Court Justice in Texas. You had worked with then Governor Bush as counsel, as to the governor. You'd held a number of prestigious positions. Are you concerned about this sort of the sanctity of the office, the idea that someone kind of obscure, and I'll speculate in a minute about why he's being picked, but just on his background, that someone obscure is getting this important a position?
Well, let's not forget that at least the public statements have been, or assurances have been, this is temporary and will not be permanent. But clearly, you've got some very seasoned, experienced litigators and prosecutors and career individuals at the Department of Justice. And, from my perspective, I care about the department. I think that the career folks need to believe that their leader is someone who's extraordinary, an exemplary example of leadership. And, I don't want in any way demean Matt or in any way diminish the position of the U.S. attorney in Iowa, which Matt held. But, there's some really talented people within the department itself, within the chain of command, that I think, hopefully the president took a look at. This is a very important position. It sends a very strong signal about how the president views the Department of Justice. And I'd like to think that he views it as one of the gems, in a constellation of cabinet positions, and that we need to have the best people possible leading these agencies.
It seems, don't you think it's pretty clear why he picked him? I mean, as you point out, his position in Iowa, while in Iowa, is a very important one on a national scale. He's certainly much less, quote unquote, qualified than a lot of the other people who you mentioned. And the reason it seems pretty clear that he was chosen is because he's criticized the Mueller investigation repeatedly on television and in writing, said that he would have taken the Don Jr. Russia meeting, suggested that the special counsel investigation shouldn't have even started, et cetera. I mean, it's pretty clear that's why he was chosen.
Well, as I said, I don't think he did himself any favors, and the administration did not do itself any favors by selecting someone who's with that kind of record. But I'm not going to get into the mind or the motivation of the president. He certainly has the authority to do that. I can certainly understand why questions have been raised. And for that reason alone, you know, I think one could question the selection here, you know, because as there, as I said before, there are a number of talented individuals within Maine Justice, I think, who could do the job very well, even on a temporary basis.
You said it's within his power to do it, and yet there are questions as well, technical ones, as to whether it is in his power. I mean, it's something that you've studied extensively. You wrote something in 2001 about the Justice Department succession policies taking precedence over presidential decisions, and there is some ambiguity in the statute being used here to appoint him even temporarily. I would think, based on your analysis back in 2001, that the Justice Department succession plan should have applied here, meaning someone else from the Department of Justice should have been appointed acting rather than someone from outside.
Well, let's not forget, he was within the Department of Justice. He was the chief of staff. So let's at least give him that bit of credit. I don't know whether or not my analysis has been superseded by more recent analysis.
But what do you think? I mean, it was your analysis. I mean, do you still agree with what you wrote back then?
I think the department is better served. I think the president is best served by choosing within the chain of command people that have been working at the highest levels of the Department of Justice who have been fully vetted by the Senate. I still stand by that position. But again, the president of the United States has decided to go a different way. And I'm not sure there's much that can be done about it at this point, particularly if this truly is going to be a temporary appointment. But I certainly understand why questions have been raised as to the authority of Matt Whitaker as the acting attorney general.
Talking to the former attorney general of the United States, Alberto Gonzalez, should people be concerned if he tries to constrain the Mueller investigation at this point?
Well, I'd be concerned if Mr. Whitaker or anyone tried to constrain the Mueller investigation at this point. I've been on record for a long, long time that I believe that the Mueller investigation is very important. It should be allowed to be concluded, to come to its logical end. I think that we need to find out exactly what happened, the scope of Russia meddling, and what Americans might have been involved in that meddling. So, yeah, I'd be concerned if anyone tries to short-circuit it before Mr. Mueller has completed his investigation.
And, you know, as you know, he's suggested that there are other ways apart from firing Robert Mueller. He's talked publicly about the idea of you could sort of withhold funds, and there are other ways he's suggested that you could defang the Mueller investigation. But what happens if Mueller now decides he wants to indict, and I know you won't want to play the name game, so I won't name any names, but just wants to indict somebody else here in connection with that investigation? And the acting attorney general, Whitaker, says, "No, I don't want you to do that." What should happen?
Well, yeah, I think Mr. Whitaker will. I think we'll have a very candid conversation with the Bob Mueller. Bob has a great deal of experience, and if Bob believes that an indictment is warranted here, at the end of the day, he's the investigator primarily here, and Mr. Whitaker will have the final say as to whether or not an indictment should go forward. You know, when Mr. Whitaker made these comments, he was a commentator and did not have access to information about the Mueller investigation. He's in a much different position now. He has much more at stake now. Now he has the interest of the Department of Justice at stake, the reputation of the department. He has to take into consideration the views of the career individuals of the department. So he's in a much different position, and once he has any kind of briefing or additional information from Bob Mueller, he very well may decide, you know what, I was completely wrong. This is something that needs to go forward, and we need to find out what happened here.
Except that he has criticized the very appointment of Robert Mueller, right? I mean, he has been critical of just the fact that there is a special counsel. So with that in mind, it is hard to believe that he's suddenly going to change his position about that because he sees what they're investigating.
I disagree with that. I think that he's going to have access to information they didn't have before in making that uninformed assessment. And so I've got to believe that, well, at least I'm hopeful that once he receives the information from Bob Mueller, that he'll agree with Mueller that there has been wrongdoing here. And listen, let's not forget. I mean, there have been guilty pleas, there have been convictions, there have been indictments. Yeah. So there's been a lot going on here that I think justifies the fact that this appointment was made and that we've been very successful in the prosecution of people engaged in wrongdoing.
Absolutely. And look, you're being very careful and cautious in your language, and you know you can read between the lines, et cetera. But I think that it's important. And I say cautious, meaning about your comments on the appointment of Matt Whitaker as the acting attorney general. But I think that for most people who are looking at this, who care about law enforcement, and they care about the attorney general's position, and they care about the Department of Justice, they look at this and it's sort of depressing, this idea that a guy who seems comparatively unqualified, whose primary qualification is his criticism of the Mueller investigation and his pronouncement that Hillary Clinton should have been indicted, is the person being chosen.
Well, I'm going to conclude with this. I'm sorry that I've sounded guarded in my comments. I want to make one thing very clear. I care very much about the department. My comments should not be interpreted as indicating that I am not concerned here. I am concerned here. I have questions here about this appointment, particularly when you have someone like Rod Rosenstein, you have someone like Noel Francisco, people that used to work for me. I know their judgment. I know their experience. And they would have, you know, they're within the chain of command and with respect to the line of authority within the department. And it just seems to me the administration could have avoided itself a lot of headache by following the chain of authority and appointing someone else. So, yes, I'm concerned. And so why don't I just sign off with that, just express you know, my concern and hope that this works forward. And at the end of the day, you know, this may not have any effect whatsoever on the Mueller investigation. That's my hope.
Former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, thank you so much for your time.
This has been the Dan Abrams Law and Crime Podcast with SiriusXM Radio.